Today, making banking work for people. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, World.is Post, covering finance and broad news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Matt Robson from New Zealand. Hi there.
Hi there. Good to be with you, Martin.
Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate your time today. This is a really important conversation because as part of your political career, you were involved in helping to craft Kiwi Bank, which is effectively a very important institution now in New Zealand. I'd like to explore that with you a little bit today. And maybe we could just start with a brief introduction of yourself, but then go into why it was that this banking question came up.
All right. The party that I was involved with, which launched the Kiwi Bank or the policy, was called the Alliance. It was an amalgam of three or four smaller parties, including my own, called the New Labour Party. And we had mostly originated out of the fact that in 84, the Labour, then Labour government began a set of policies which we didn't agree with, which were largely the prescription for privatisation of public industries and enterprises, and in particular the banking, well, not particularly, but one of the key was the banking sector. And so as we went forward and campaigned and eventually became part of a coalition government with Labour, a key plank was re-establishing a public bank because, as with Australia, with the Commonwealth Bank, there had been a tradition of having a public bank which played a key role both in the economy and in services to people. So that's the background of myself for becoming a member of Parliament in 96, a cabinet minister in 1999. And then we were able to achieve the goal of establishing a public bank, not without massive opposition.
Yes. Now, there's a couple of really interesting observations there. The first is that you mentioned effectively privatise everything, which, you know, was very much in vogue and frankly is still very much in vogue for many people. And many people would say, you know, the private sector should be left to get on with it because they're going to be always more efficient, more effective, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess that's sort of a neoliberal view of the world. But why is it that banking doesn't work well in that context?
Well, given the fact that a bank, obviously a private bank, is there to make a profit, it's not there to provide a public service, and governments are in a different position. They can make a profit, but they should, if they're a good government caring for their people, have an overriding principle that anything they do is for the benefit of society, for everybody, not just perhaps a smaller group of shareholders. So the fact that there was no public banking left an enormous hole, both in the overall ability of a government to intervene in the economy in a positive way and set long-term goals rather than short-term goals that private banks necessarily have. I mean, they're there to provide a income or return to their shareholders. They're not going to stay in business if they don't. But the government can stay in business and still meet broader goals, public goals, social goals. And that was the motivation behind bringing back a bank, along with a raft of other policies which were in line with that philosophy.
And was it partly because there were businesses and households who couldn't get the banking services that they wanted, or was it that the price of those services were too high, or, you know, what was the real effect down on the ground?
A combination. It meant that if the banks were following a particular lending policy for individuals and for businesses, particularly smaller businesses, they didn't have a bank that could look beyond their ability perhaps to pay immediately or pay what the bank was asking in terms of a price for interest. And in terms of withdrawal of services to communities, that was going ahead apace. And I understand similarly in Australia, there's a similar issue of banks not being open, not providing services. And alongside the closing of we call them post shops now, but they were post offices at one stage. But the longer the closing of post offices, facilities were being withdrawn. And so on the ground, it meant that all types of people, well before the development of the advanced technological internet age of banking now and those types of arguments to why you can't have bank, or shouldn't have banks open. People relied on their local bank, and so they just didn't have it. And of course, it was a bigger impact on those without resources to be able to travel, go to another branch, costly. And it wasn't just those who were, you know, older population. It was also younger people without, and businesses without those resources. An enormous impact on the well-being of the people of the country.
Right. So it's about access to services as well as the price and distribution of services, right?
Both, yes. Yep.
And you mentioned opposition, because the whole concept of creating a national bank and using the postal network as effectively the channel, that presumably didn't go down well with the private sector banks who were in the ascendancy at the time. But was the opposition broader than that?
Well, that's an understatement. The opposition was virulent. There was a broadside attack, which is fine. You could have a discussion and a debate on, you know, issues. But it was type of the sky will fall in if you have a public bank type of arguments. And the interesting factor, as far as I was concerned and my colleagues, was that the arguments of those opposed to a public sector bank, actually a reintroduction of what we'd already successfully had in New Zealand, so through the Bank of New Zealand, which had been the publicly owned bank, was that was an ideological argument. There's no place for government. There's no place for the public in the banking sector. It's best run by the private sector. And it was our side, our party, left-wing socialist, if you like, that was putting up the hard arguments, the business case for such a bank. And it was the other side that didn't have a business case. And that's where they eventually faltered, because they found it on the facts when it came to putting on the table the business case for this bank, which was sound and has proved to be sound, whereas the opposition of the Treasury, which is responsible to advise the government, the banking, the private banking sector, well, it obviously could be discounted to a large degree because there was obviously a conflict of interest if there was a public bank, but also the academic establishment, most of the academics seemed to fall into the category of those who were arguing that small government, privatize, lower tax, it was the recipe for success in any economy. And they launched an all-out attack as well on the concept.
And you mentioned the business case, and I think it's important to underscore this. There was a positive business case to do this. It wasn't like just handing government money over and expecting to make a loss, was it?
Not at all. And you know, when we first started off, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, most of us as younger activists just wanted a public bank and didn't have all the details at our disposal. We were convinced that we were starting to do our homework, and we had the arguments, but we needed hard facts, and particularly our leader, Jim Anderton. He was a man who was wedded to facts in all of his political life and taught us the primary benefit of coming to an argument, knowing what you're talking about. And he was approached by the New Zealand Post Board, or the chair, a man called Ross Armstrong, who had the benefit of coming from a conservative background, having been the president of the National Party, our equivalent to your Liberal Party. And he and his colleagues on the board, or at least a majority of them, could see that Post was coming into an age where the traditional sending letters was not going to be the basis of their business, and they needed to expand. And they also had a public ethos, philosophy, of course, but they could see the advantage of developing a bank. And so they had already crunched the numbers of the customers, the likely base, the services that could be provided. And best of all, they already had a network of post shops or post offices, which could be used as the basis. So they came and talked to us and to Jim Anderton in particular, as the leader of the party and our finance spokesperson. And they worked together and developed the plan, which was ultimately successful.
And it's also worth underscoring, isn't it, that the concept of a post-based bank is something which does exist in other places around the world as well, and has been part of the architecture of many societies.
Well, it certainly was part of the ability to, well, it didn't need to really convince the public. The public was sold on the need for a public bank, largely from the angle of we want better services, we're sick of high fees from the bank and fees we don't understand, and just getting letters in the post, or I guess the email age was beginning to say, sorry, you're being charged for this, or we're being charged for that, or our fees are going up. And they could understand that there was a cartel. I'm talking about the general member of the public. But there was a tradition too in New Zealand. We're talking about the architecture around the world of successful public banking and a necessary tool for a government to have for development above and beyond services. New Zealand had that tradition, a small landmass, but hilly and mountainous. The development of the rail was through the government. The development of roads was through the government. And so on. And so then looking at other countries, Japan, for example, which had public banking service, Germany had post office and banking services, many, many other countries, and Australia in its history as well.
Indeed. And, of course, the launch went well, actually remarkably well, and the growth was pretty amazing initially, wasn't it?
Yes. At first it was said, well, we had an internal battle. The Labour Party, which had gone over to a fairly right-wing view of economics in the 80s, it had pulled back, which is why we were able to form a coalition in 1999 under Helen Clark's prime ministership. And the extreme right wing of the Labour Party had split off into the ACT Party, the Association of Consumer and Taxpayers, which perhaps explains their philosophy. But still, Labour was wedded to the idea that you couldn't bring back public service into banking. It was gone. Move on, they were saying. Their own base didn't say that. And so the opposition was also coming from within. But Labour, when it finally capitulated in the cabinet, it was four of us, four of our party, and 16 Labour, and they were against it. So they finally had to succumb to the pressure, the public pressure for what was called Jim's Bank, Jim Anderson. They didn't have a name, just Jim's Bank around the country. They said, the Minister of Finance, Michael Cullen, famously said, here's $60 million seeding money. That's all you're getting. Basically, when it fails, there's no more. Well, we had great confidence. The opponents were saying, all you'll get, it was a very arrogant argument, beneficiaries and down and outs and the needy sort of people. It was quite contemptuous of the public. But into the bank poured everybody because who couldn't get a service, including people who were on benefits. They needed it as well, but retired people, small business people in particular. Most of the larger businesses kept a distance. I think it was a matter of pride in seeing that they weren't quite with this type of a bank. That has changed. That attitude has changed. But within 3 years, and we can come to that if you like, the bank was a roaring success, absolutely paid back the government in spades.
Well, yes, let's talk about the growth, because it sort of took off and took off significantly. And they, of course, they did small business stuff. They did mortgages and other transactional banking. So it was a relatively full range of services, wasn't it?
It was. From the beginning, the bank was ready to provide a full suite of services. Of course, it needed to grow and it needed the capital base. But it was the growth of the people who joined, and within 3 years we got a population of, well, that time below, just below 5 million, 800,000 customers. took it out of the other banks. People poured in and joined. It was able to make the other banks do these things: reduce their fees, reduce their mortgage rates. Yeah, take that off for the public. But also they put a moratorium on closing branches, and the Kiwi Bank began opening branches. It was one of the best things of all. We could go, from a political point of view, it was nice to have your photo taken at a bank opening. There was a benefit there. And pretty quickly, soon, the Labour Party started to claim this as well. There was sort of airbrushed certain things out of history, such as going on television when the bank was open, Helen Clark saying she'd be staying with her own bank, and Michael Cullen, Minister of Finance, I'll be staying with my bank, and they sniffed at it. Helen has had the grace to admit that it was one of the things she got wrong, very wrong. But they then, members of parliament from Labour, started to realise if they were photographed in a bank opening, that was a political winner. We weren't averse to that either, but we actually got shoved aside. Success has many fathers, I think the saying is.
And so that I find that really interesting, that the spillover effects were that other than, you know, the retail, the commercial banks had to change their tune to compete.
Yes, and it was something that, you know, many of us in public life have understood, that you're told the mantra that only the private sector is efficient and this and that, until it comes to the crunch and they don't want to be involved in things where there's a greater social need and a need for a longer-term vision and a resources that a country has. A country doesn't go broke in the way that obviously individuals do, and governments can, you know, horror of horror, print money in the right way. And so there's a range of benefits. And then knowing your customers and knowing your community and working alongside of them, a small business that needs to develop it but needs a break, a farm that shouldn't go under because of the product that it gives to the country, and so forth, in so many areas as part of the toolkit of government, which is what we were also trying to explain to our colleagues. This isn't just providing a new shiny bank. It's also part of a government's toolkit. If you're looking ahead, how do we work in with the educational institutes in this particular region? And that's one of the other key planks that we brought along with the Kiwi Bank from our party. Labour didn't have it. They'd lost all of that planning ability, having succumbed to the argument, you don't need planning, you just leave everything and somehow magically everything becomes okay, which didn't make sense to the population, didn't make sense to most of us, but at one stage it did to the Labour Party. And so they'd lost their ability to think widely like this and how beneficial it was, because the Alliance had a policy of regional economic development, which Labour once had in 1984. It had been their policy. We basically updated it. And New Zealand, being a smaller country than Australia, but still the regions are important, their differences and their advantages. We don't have the same distances that you've got, which I would think, a little plug here, I think Australia needs one. Having been born in Queensland and the Northern Territory, I know the enormous distances. And if you haven't got a service in your area or a bank that knows how the local economy works and what might be a good way to develop it. So that's what we brought back to New Zealand, a publicly owned bank. Not just a New Zealand-owned bank. That's only part of it. I mean, New Zealand-owned businesses who buy into the bank would have the same philosophy as the big ones, Westpac, CBA. By the way, it's all the big banks here are Australian-owned or Australian-based.
They are indeed. And what I find fascinating about this is the way that the local footprint of the Kiwi Bank and the connections with the local community were just so different from what the major guys were doing, because since then, of course, they have started to sort of close branches in various places. But the regional communities are still being served by Kiwi Bank.
Yes, perhaps come to that in your discussions. There has been some setbacks, so we're no longer directing how this bank operates. But certainly the fact that the Kiwi Bank has still been there has put pressure on the banks to maintain services. Unfortunately, the policy of opening branches, the Kiwi Bank present board has gone back from that. So there's a bit of a political battle going on to reestablish its original philosophy of the importance of banking. And there's also an area where we had planned, but my party no longer exists. The leaders died. We had an internal war and it doesn't exist, but the philosophy is still there. And one of the things that you need is a government supporting the bank itself. One thing it doesn't have, which the government banks with Westpac. And I don't think Westpac needs all of the government departments banking with them. They make enough money anyway, but they have that. So there's a whole range of room for further development, but we do have we had won at least won the battle that a public bank is important.
And just going back to your point earlier about this was before digital, you know, and of course the banks, the major banks, the retail banks say, well, everybody can now do everything online. They don't need the local point of presence. Actually, don't even need cash. What's your reaction to that? And do you think that is a bit self-serving?
I do. And one of the things that it's something you find many times when there's change afoot, there's no other alternative. This is very modern. This is the way to do it. When there was a reason for seeming old-fashioned and having certain regulations, because previous generation found that if you didn't have them, bad things happened. Whether it's in the building industry, we had a disaster here by ending regulation and on how to build houses, and then suddenly all the houses had leaks and destroyed, and huge problem. I'm just giving an example of regulation. Now, in the banking sector, this is trotted out all the time. Everybody's online. Well, actually, they're not. And it's not just older people. I mean, a lot of older people have got the time to actually be online. They're talking to their grandchildren. They're very adept at it. Not all of them, but a wide range of people. And often, younger people can't afford internet connections. They can't afford to get the laptop. They can't even afford to service their phone. It's not true that it's right across the board. But there are other services of the bank as well. Even like my mother used to like to have a person to go down and berate, even if there was nothing wrong. She liked to berate them, which was her democratic right, I thought. But, when a bank is open, there's other benefits. People go to the bank. They go and shop in the local area. There's a you've got to think beyond. And they provide services. You want to talk about a loan, a business or a mortgage, you need to go to your local bank. The local bank manager used to be the person. She or he could, make a difference by knowing locally. So many services. It's also an advertisement for the bank when it's open. And as for cash, well, today, one of New Zealand's cities, Taumarunui, has been out, no internet for 3 days, I think. And suddenly, no one's got any cash. No one's taken it out. The banks aren't open. Their nearest branch is 50 kilometres away, and so forth. And we're in a transition period. And, of course, internet banking is important. Of course, there's a lot of services you can do. But it hasn't replaced that basic need to have a hub and a service. And particularly if it's working alongside the post. They work as a synergy, both of them. And I recently had just a personal experience. I tried to put some cash into a banking automatic machine, about $1,000 or something. And it was broken. And the person there said, well, we had it fixed 3 times. There was a person at the particular place. They weren't taking deposits. And they said, but, we can't get it fixed. I finally went down to a branch. I discovered one that had a person, and they took my money. I had a car. I was able to do it. I had the resources. And I thought, what if someone turns up here and they haven't got a car? Well, they can't afford it because it's $3 a litre to buy petrol in New Zealand at the moment. So if you think it's tough in Australia, it's $3 a litre. So many issues. So it's very short-sighted to turn down and say, we close branches, we close services. There's more to it than just being able to transfer some money because you can get onto your internet.
Great. Well, just before we close, my last question is this. If you were going through that journey again, what's the most critical inflection point to get right to try and actually create the momentum towards a public bank?
Oh, well, if we're talking about getting it started, it's having the campaign and having the figures right and presenting it with all your allies across the public and get the public support. That's what won it in New Zealand. It wasn't the fact that we were there, we led it. But for the Labour Party, which was with us and had the majority of seats, it was their members saying, we want Jim's bank, and pouring into their MPs and demanding that they get it. Unions in support of it, small businesses in support of it. So just a huge campaign. But the after point is important. Well, one of the mistakes we made was we didn't keep the minister in charge of this. It wasn't that Labor did a bad job, but they didn't make sure, for instance, that the board you appoint is very important. It has to be in line with the philosophy of expansion, not just being a mini competitor for the other bank. I think you had that experience from, I'm not an expert in it, but having studied the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, 1911 set up. But during the Depression, you had a board and governors who were against the plans of government to ride out the Depression, to have basically Keynesian methods, I guess. And you had to have another legislation in 1945 to make sure it did what it was told. And our present bank, I have a criticism of it. There's not a minister who understands that. They're even looking at, shall we get a little bit of privatization, mum and dad investors, which is ruinous because mum and dad investors soon get bought out by the big banks. So the follow-up is to make sure that politically, it's the politics that are important, that the government has a firm control of it as the shareholder on behalf of the people, of course, with sound banking practices, as the Shiko broke, but to have this broader goal and be part of an ongoing development of techniques that a government's got as part of its economic toolkit, including that we wanted to develop from here a public development finance corporation that had been sold as well, so that the bank can work with other government financial instruments and local financial instruments, local councils. There's a whole range of ways, as many governments have shown, to raise money rather than just on the private funding market, on the stock markets.
Well, I really appreciate your time today, and it's very, very pertinent because Robbie Barker and I recorded a show yesterday specifically on the campaign that is now taking off here in Australia to try and have that same conversation, the new political parties in the ascendancy here and all those things. So we think this is really important. But I do think that the point you make there about having the right ongoing governance and the right structures to support it into the future, because it's very easy to sort of swerve off and suddenly yes. find that those neoliberal values are still just below the surface and they sort of come back and grab you by the throat. So it's really important to be ideologically clean on it, I think.
Well, I wish it well, because who knows, I probably may retire in my home country, particularly if Queensland keeps winning the Rugby League Shield, state of origin. So I want to be able to return to a publicly owned bank.
Well, I thank you for your time today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and your insights have been tremendous. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Martin.